Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another emancipated episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Bill Larkin and Derek Trumbly of the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. The show is now going on at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place, and you gotta hear this interview because you can definitely tell they're having a good time. Also, Tom Williams will be bringing us two more audio reviews. And of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of July 31st, 2006. Big Bang, the unofficial inaugural production of the new Downstairs Theater at the Chicago Theater, has closed its curtains due to the inability to find its Chicago audience. Now, the production was supposed to run until August 20th, but unfortunately had its last show on Sunday, July 23rd. Big Bang was the first production in the new basement space that had previously housed such things as Siskel and Ebert's movie screenings and some broadcast by WIBE Radio. Now, the owners of the Chicago Theater had recently turned the basement into a new 281-seat venue for the off-loop Chicago theater scene. Big Bang had originally opened in Philadelphia, but was unable to bang its way into the heart of the Chicago audiences. The next thing up for the Chicago Theater downstairs space will be Sheer Madness, that is slated to open on September 18th. And as some of you may remember out there, Sheer Madness is definitely not a stranger to Chicago. It ran for about 17 years at the old Blackstone Theater, so hopefully it has a little bit more staying power than Big Bang. The world premiere of Andrew Lippa's Asphalt Beach will be the third new musical to emerge from the recently launched American Music Theater project at Northwestern University. Now, the show will feature the music and lyrics by Andrew Lippa, but the book was written by T.C. Smith and Peter Spears. The performances will be running from October 27th through November 12th up in Evanston. And the show will be launching Northwestern's 2006-2007 main stage theater season this fall. Asphalt Beach was initially developed for MTV, but the authors reversed course and redeveloped it for the stage in an effort to fully realize the material's potential. Now, the show received its first reading back in April of 2006 as a part of the TheaterWorks New Works Festival, and Andrew is very excited to be bringing it onto the stage at Northwestern University. Also, don't forget to check out Talk Theater in Chicago's interview section to hear an interview with Stuart Oaken and Dominic Massimi from Northwestern University. They do talk about the American Music Theater Project and the current show running, The Boys Are Coming Home. Don't miss it. Also, don't forget to head on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. There you're going to find an in-depth interview with Chicago set designer Brian Sidney Bembridge. We had a chance to catch up with him during Tech Week at Writers Theater as he was finishing up the stage lighting for The Duchess of Malfi. As you read the interview, you're going to find out six very interesting things about the set designer, as Ann Nicholson Weber breaks it down beautifully for you. Don't miss it. Talk Theater in Chicago would also like to congratulate Lisa Joyce. You may remember her from Adam Rapp's Red Light Winter at Steppenwolf Theater. Well, that role won her national fame, and she has now been cast in the national tour of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Doubt. The show will be coming to Chicago in January. Congratulations, Lisa Joyce. Ravinia's Gypsy, which will be running from August 11th through August 13th, starring Patti LuPone, has finally finished up its casting. And it's right about time, they only have a couple of weeks to rehearse. The music will be provided by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and the tickets to this huge theatrical event are going fast. Remember, that's August 11th through the 13th. Get your tickets now. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, you can find out more information at talktheaterinchicago.com's theater news section. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Spinning into Butter. Spinning into Butter by Rebecca Gildman, produced by Eclipse Theater Company at Victory Gardens Theater. Spinning into Butter is a brave denunciation of the white liberal racism. Eclipse Theater, which is number 10 on my list of the best non-equity theaters in Chicago, continues its season of One Playwright, One Season with Rebecca Gilman's controversial Spinning into Butter. This is a brutally honest look at the subtle racism unknowingly practiced by many white liberals, particularly in academia. This is an important work that is marvelously presented and packs a wallop. Gilman has it all going with this riveting theme that only the bravest playwrights would venture writing about. Good for her, since racism and political correctness are worthy themes in this day and age. This tragic comedy is full of wit, biting humor, and academic archetypes. Spinning into Butter is focused on a small Vermont college where controversy arises when racist notes are pinned to the door of an African-American student. The new dean of students, Sarah Daniels, played with intensity and rich nuances by Kerry Richland, is caught in the middle between helping the student and doing the politically correct thing. Sarah herself has issues with her own guilt, her own internal racism, despite her most sincere efforts to help minority students. At her personal loss of her lover, Professor Ross Collins, Sarah is not having a good time at Belmont College. Sarah and Ross have one of those liberal lovers' agreements whereby neither are totally committed, yet each acts as if they are. Ross and Sarah exchange the liberated adult take on personal relationship. When Sarah attempts to help a minority student, played by Geraldo Cardenas, get a $12,000 scholarship, he resists being categorized as Latin or Latino or Puerto Rican. He insists he's a New Yorkian and an individual who only wants to be heard and accepted for who he is. Sarah, in her bureaucratic mode, tells Patrick that he must be listed as a recognizable group in order to get the scholarship. So he reluctantly lets her check Puerto Rican. She apologizes for the dehumanizing treatment to him necessary for him to get the scholarship. Her guilt nags at her. The racist notes have Sarah telling the security chief, Myers, played by John Ruhick, to contact the police as a possible hate crime. The faculty, led by Dean Kenny, which is Cherry Chenoweth, Sarah's boss, and the dean of students, Larry Baldacci, the ultra-snob academic, who want to keep the incident from the public. These two are trying to distance themselves as much as they can from any tag of being a racist. In an attempt to distance themselves, the college, from any responsibility, they offer seminars and official statements in response to the crisis. The deans never care about the minority students and what they have to say. The I'm not racist declarations by the faculty get Sarah doing a self-examination of her motives and attitudes toward blacks. In Act 2, Sarah delivers to Ross a 20-minute monologue wherein she gives her history of how she intellectually fought her racism by studying African-American history and culture and becoming a college administrator dedicating to helping the minority students. But slowly, she realized that her plantation mentality was condescending and insulting to minorities despite her sincerest efforts to help them. But the most telling story that zeroes in Sarah's white liberal racism is her description of her L rides in Chicago. Sarah goes on to say that on one level, she thinks many blacks are rude, lazy, and stupid, and too darn scary. That's a quote from her. Ross admits that he does the same thing on subway trips, and that when he looks at a black person, he sees a black person first before anything else. Whereas when he sees a white person, he sees a woman or a man, he sees if they're pretty or if the man is large or small as the most noticeable trait. The honesty of Sarah and Ross's admissions sure must ring true to many of us. Sarah further states that she moved to Vermont to avoid dealing with blacks. Playwright Gilman depicts the hypocrisy of the white supremacist capitalist patriarch through the self-serving actions of Dean Kenny and Dean Strauss. Without giving away more plot points, let me say that Spinning into Butter deftly deals with the lack of communication between minority students and the faculty, letting dialogue open between the students where white and blacks can communicate their attitudes, their wants, their dreams. Doesn't comply with the administration's sense of political correctness. Ambivalence and misunderstanding of minorities is surely hampered by political correctness. Sarah points the way by opening communication, first with herself, then with the minorities. Gilman offers hope through honest, uninhibited dialogue. Racism can be solved one person at a time. Kudos to Eclipse Theater for mounting this cautionary look into the unspoken cancer of white liberal racism. Let the debate begin. My rating on this show, highly recommended. It is Spinning into Butter. It is produced by Eclipse Theater Company at Victory Gardens Theater, 2257 North Lincoln in Chicago. Call 773-871-3000. The running time is 2 hours with intermission. And the number to get more information on the show is 773-871-3000. Thank you for listening. This is Tom Williams. Go see a play this week. Thank you. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here's my review of 100 Saints You Should Know. By Kate Fodor. Directed by B.J. Jones at Steppenwolf Garage Theater as part of the First Look program. New work delves into the search for faith and meaning of life. Following her success of her first play, Hannah and Martin, at Timeline Theater, Kate Fodor has delivered another gem with 100 Saints You Should Know. This play, while still in development, has enough power and dramatic essence to be worth seeing. Under the tight direction from B.J. Jones, 100 Saints is an engaging story of faith, love, and the search for meaning in one's life. Fodor has developed complex, empathetic characters within a nice mixture of humor and serious drama. The play deals with a devout Stoic priest, Matthew, played by the intense and commanding John Hogenacker. Matthew, who is asked to leave his parish following a scandal, he is the parish priest. The cleaning lady, Teresa, played by K.K. Dodds, a 30-something mother of an unruly teenage daughter, Abby, played by Kelly O'Sullivan, is smitten by the priest, and she follows him to his mother's home to deliver a book that he left. Teresa and her daughter, Abby, have a love-hate relationship, with foul language and guilt being strewed out by Abby, the daughter. Teresa travels to the priest's family to return a book that he left at the rectory. She really wants to get Father Matthew to enable her to find faith in God after years of being an atheist. The mother has a search for meaning to try and justify the tough life she has. Matthew returns home, so he finds his Irish mother, Colleen, in a terrific comic wit from the fabulous actress Marianne Thebes. The mother was ordering food as she gently but firmly attempts to find out why Matthew has left his parish. Thebes almost steals the show with her lovable Irish mother. Add the grocery boy, Garrett, fine work from the high school student, Bryce Pegalo, who is struggling with his awareness of being gay and his chance encounter with Abby outside the priest's home, and 100 Saints becomes a smart, complex work about finding meaning in life with the aid of faith in God. Abby thinks she's evil, yet she struggles with her loneliness, as are all the characters here. While she quickly likes Garrett's innocence and pure honesty, she gets him drunk in an attempt to humiliate him. In the meantime, Teresa tries to get Matthew to help her find God, but Colleen, the mother, believes that she is trying to seduce the priest and gets in the way. Matthew struggles with his apparent loss of faith, and he can't find it in his heart to help Garrett or Teresa. His obsession with Robert Mapplethorpe's male nudes and his quest for beauty in the form of wanting to be touched and his struggle against the strong sexual urges he has are overcoming his faith in God as he questions his calling to the priesthood. Hoganaker is powerful in these emotional confessional scenes. When events cause a tragedy, the characters come to grips with their demons as Fodor resolves the conflicts in a plausible manner. This is a powerful, moving work that will haunt you long after the show ends. It's a marvelous piece of theater. I don't want to give away parts of the plot line because they would diminish the power of the show. My rating on the show, highly recommended. The show is 100 Saints You Should Know. It's at Steppenwolf Garage Theater. The ticket price is only $15, or you can see all three shows in the First Look program for $30, which is what I recommend. The running time is 2 hours with intermission. This is a worthy show to see a very, very talented playwright. Kate Fodor is a writer you should see. This is Tom Williams saying thank you for listening, and go see a play this week. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guests today are from the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee that is at Water Tower Place that's been running now for 5 months. And folks, this is a great show. So I'm looking forward to interviewing. We have with us Derek Trumbly.
My name is Derek Trumbly. I'm playing Leif Coneybear.
Okay. And Bill Larkin, who plays...
I play Vice Principal Douglas Panch.
Okay, let's start with you, Bill.
All right.
Okay, you are one of the people who questions everybody, talks about what the words are, right? It brings the contestants up.
He does. He organizes all the words and sentences. He questions everything. But it's really Lisa Peretti. I want to make sure I get her name right. She's very attractive. She's the one who actually runs the spelling bee, but I'm there to give the words and sentences to those fortunate enough to be there.
And Derek, you play one of the characters. Tell us about your contestant.
My contestant is the sweetest kid in the world. He tries his hardest to do things right, and he learns something about himself in the process.
So, Bill, tell us now what spelling bee's about, the concept.
Okay. And I think many people are familiar with, you know, when they went to school or if they're currently in school, what an actual spelling bee is. It's basically, I mean, that's the best way to describe it to somebody is that you're at a spelling bee in like, you know, held here in the gymnasium of the school. And basically, you know, the brightest of the bright are here from all the other schools, and they're here to compete. And they're here to show, like, you know, how what they can achieve and how good they are.
And it's audience interactive too, right?
It is.
Some of the contestants you pick right out of the audience, right?
It is. I think that throws a lot of people. I think a lot of people when they come in don't realize that they're as soon as they see them come up to the stage, you're like, oh, people from the audience can get involved in this too. And it's all volunteer. I mean, it's people who are talked to before the show begins.
Because I've been asked that because when I was here on opening night, I don't know if you remember the opening night in April.
Yep.
I believe that when you were trying to knock out a couple of them to keep the show going,
right?
Didn't they spell a couple of very tough words?
They did
correctly. You guys had to go deeper into to eliminate them.
It's almost like we're dangling a carrot in front of them. We start with some pretty easy ones that even you can see the audience also going, okay, I think I know how to spell that. And then by the time everybody is introduced and you know who all the characters are, they start to get more difficult as they would in a normal spelling bee. And it's interesting to watch the audience members on stage as well as out in the house try to figure out what they are.
All right, Derek, I've got to ask you this. What is it like for a young actor
like yourself to land a role in a major equity show, kind of a world-renowned show, and one of the best shows that come in town in years.
It has worked and is working incredibly well. It's a dream. I'm living a dream. I don't have to work a day job right now because I am doing what I love for a living and having a great time doing it. So,
but you're not the only one, right?
I'm not. There's myself, Christine Warney, who plays Logan Schwartz and Grubinier, Brad Weinstock, who plays Chip Berkowitz, and Jen Sese, who plays Marcy Park. All of them were still in the process of graduating college when they got this role. Their roles in this,
and you're
this
show. So you're one of the old veterans, a year out of college, right?
Yeah, I'm a year out of the college, which makes me definitely a father figure to them.
But not on stage. I mean the character. Tell us about your character. I mean, he is so
well. He's in the B on a technicality. In
he
his,
was like fourth in his.
He
local
was third. Right? He was third in his local B of I think three people, and the other two were have to go to a bat mitzvah. On the day of this spelling bee, so they couldn't make it, so he gets to go. And he's living a dream on stage.
He certainly is. And, Bill, let's point out that this is a musical. The reason we talk about how funny it is, because I said in my review that I thought it was one of the funniest musicals I've ever seen. And everyone that I've recommended the show, they come back and they go, boy, it was so funny.
Yeah,
but it's musically pretty darn good too. There's some clever songs in it.
It really, I mean, when you have William Finn behind it, I mean, it can't help but be just a brilliant production. And and James Lapine, who directed it. I mean, when you're working with people of that caliber, I mean, it's going to be a great production. And yeah, musically, it's very. I mean, I think some people may think because it's a spelling bee, it might be lighter. There are some very complex songs in it, and some intricate melodies. I play piano outside of here, and then when I hear the actual music, I'm like, wow, it's like.
And doesn't everybody have a song?
Well, not everybody.
Most everyone. I know, Derek, you have a song, right? Tell us about the song.
I'm writing a song called Pancha's Lament. It's going to be on the next album.
Oh, okay.
No, he doesn't. But yeah, Coney Bear does it. Tell him about your song.
My song is called I'm Not That Smart, and it's about how I'm not that smart.
But each one has a character-specific song.
Every character but Pancha, yeah.
Everyone, oh well.
Yeah.
Most of them do.
Most of them do.
All right, so give us the structure of the play now. Give us a reason to go. I mean, we've said it's funny.
The entire thing.
Yeah. So let me ask you a couple of – I'm not going to ask you who wins, okay. But does it change from night to night?
It does change from night
it
to
does.
Night,
okay.
Which makes it extremely exciting for us. I mean, we were talking earlier about, doing a show every night.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a new experience for me. I mean, I've never really done a long run myself, and – we look so forward to coming in every day because we know with the audience volunteers who come up there, they're gonna vary it up from time to time too, just in how they react to the spelling and how they their reactions are new to us too. So we make do. We improvise a lot they give us.
And you have that improvising role quite a bit.
It's great. I mean, Rona and I, Rona is played by Lucia Spina. We both, sit over there at the desk and get to, first find different ways to introduce people who are from the audience because everybody has their own introduction, and then decide what words we're going to give them. And again, we have a lot, we have a huge list from which to choose from, and just really, really funny sentences. Most of them were written by Jay Reese, who, originated the role of Pancha in New York.
And so that varies.
So it does.
So if you've seen the show once before, as I said, it's one of the few shows that I want to see a second time.
That's what I said. You could come back and it's
a different show.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I have friends who have seen the show more than four times. I'm not sure exactly the number, but more than four times. And every time it's just as exciting for them. And they just always find more and more little things. And as they keep coming, they keep finding smaller and smaller things that they didn't even notice before that probably weren't even there before.
Let me ask you this, Derek. How do you keep it fresh?
It's not really hard. My main acting partner as Coney Bear is the audience. And so every day there's a fresh audience. And so every day I have the luck to be able to have an easy way to a fresh character.
All right. Now, technically, how do you keep your voice? So we're doing eight shows a week, and you have several days you do more. You do two mm-hmm. in a day on the weekends and on Wednesdays. Is that correct? How do you keep your voice fresh?
Well, I make sure to drink a lot of beer, and we warm up.
And I'm not going to edit that.
Okay. We warm up. We make sure that we are using the instrument correctly. You know, breathing from the diaphragm, blah, blah, blah. We drink a lot of water.
So the fundamentals you learned really come into play
yes,
here.
Yes, absolutely.
So give us your background. You went to Columbia.
I went to Columbia College Chicago. Okay. Yes. And I studied acting there as an acting major. I got to work with such great people like Jeff Ginsburg and Sheldon Patinkin, Stephanie Shaw.
Yeah, those are top people, yes.
They are fantastic people. And from Columbia, I was actually doing the Threepenny Opera with Stephanie Shaw was directing and Jonathan Mastro was music directing. And he had a friend come in who was a casting director, I believe at Tenor Pascal. His name is Matt Miller.
Okay.
And he got me the agent who got me this job.
But before, let's give you a background now, because I saw you in the front.
Oh, right, that background. I've been doing while I was at school, I was doing shows at the Theater Building in Chicago a lot. I was doing a lot of their readings. One which you saw was The Frog Prince.
Right. Were dynamite in that, by the way.
Thank you. And then right after that, actually on the second performance of that, I had an audition for The Fantastics, and I ended up getting the role of Matt in The Fantastics with Tio Ubique, which you came and saw.
Yes, I did. And that's one of my all-time favorite shows. And
yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah, it was a terrific production. You were in that for a pretty long run, right?
Yeah, I believe we did 2.5 months, maybe 3.
And you also, you guys all waited tables, too. Was it really?
I was signed up to wait tables in the beginning, and it just got too crazy for me. I decided to stop doing that with the show. But the other actors, 3 of them were consistent and waiting the tables, yeah, before the show and then during intermission.
So you went from waiting tables in a little storefront
theater
to a major equity show on Michigan Avenue. How does that feel?
Feels great. It feels great. It's liberating. Exciting is probably the best word for it. It's exciting every day.
Well, and I'm sure you're probably going to stay with this show as long as you can.
Yes, as long as I can.
Well, that's good. And Bill, give us your background now.
Like, it's so, you know, I have been, right after I graduated from UMass Amherst back in 19, and I worked for Disney World, and I puppeteered for kids' shows, and I was, you know, did some improv, played some piano. I've been kind of fortunate in that I've always been able to perform. I mean, it wasn't always, you know, I lived in Los Angeles for a while, I lived in Orlando, Florida. So I've always been able to, in one way or another, somehow perform. And out here in Chicago, I work at Howl at the Moon, which is a dueling piano bar in the city.
Where is that?
That is off of Hubbard Street. It's really like a rock and roll, high energy, you know, Brown Eyed Girl, Margaritaville, everybody clapping and singing, that kind of place. And it's wonderful. I've been there a long time. And I love it, but it's been a long time since I was back on the stage doing theater. And I think my last time I did, you know, professional theater was about, gosh, 12 years ago back in California. So I really missed it. And I thought, and there could have been no better way to get back to the stage than with this production. I mean, it's exactly what I wanted to do.
And you're dynamite in it. I mean, being one of the leaders in setting the tone for the show, I mean, it's got to feel good that all the laughs that you land every night.
And again, with the as far as the writing with the, especially with, you know, the sentences and everything, I mean, there's so many people who, the fact that we can vary it up, the fact that whatever's happening, even in the news, I mean, we can relate it to what's going on today. I mean, we can throw stuff in and. Derek mentioned Christine Murney, who plays Logan Schwartz in Grubinaire. She's able to, you know, she's very liberal and she gets to, you know, rant every night about something that's going on and, you know, in politics or in current day politics. And it's always wonderful. So the fact that we can make it that fresh every night is just so great.
So that means, again, it's truly one of those shows that people can't see over and over.
Yeah, again. Yeah. Yeah.
And you have one of the great ladies of musical
comedy
in Chicago with Christine Page in the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Christine Page is wonderful, and I saw her in Loving Repeating before we actually started to rehearse. And I didn't know enough about the Chicago theater scene, to be honest. And she just absolutely blew me away. And the same with Lucia. I'd seen her perform at many a cabaret before the production, and just a stellar voice and a wonderful person.
So it's a nice blend of veteran actors and younger kids, which keeps the show, to me, exciting and full of energy.
Yep.
And so who else is in the cast? Now, let's give everybody their credit.
Well, there's James Earl Jones II.
Right.
And Mitch Mahoney with the power voice. Lucia Spina, as you mentioned, playing Rona Lisa Peretti. Kristen Page, Oliver Strofsky. Eric Roediger, who is a phenomenal story, if you ask me, playing William Barfay. He actually hadn't done any Chicago theater before getting this role. He was working as, what was it, the IRS repo guy, basically, and came in for this audition and landed it. He hadn't been on stage since high school. And that was probably
he is amazing. And I mean, I love the stuff when he spells the words with his foot.
Yeah. And then there's Jen Sese with Marcy Park, Christine Wernie at Logan Schwartz and Grubinier, and Brad Weinstock playing Chip Berkowitz.
So you have all these pre-adolescent nerd kids trying to please themselves, trying to please their parents, and win the spelling bee.
Mm-hmm.
And only one can win. But you tell me that the winner changes on a given night?
Well, the results, the overall results change every night.
Okay.
But what's interesting to see is, like, especially with the, because I did a spelling bee when I was in junior high, and everybody was just out to win it. And what's interesting about watching, as soon as you get to know the characters in the show, they all, you start to watch them realize how much they want it, some more than others, and they realize a lot about themselves during the actual production, what they, you know.
Yeah, that's the dramatic part. Besides the humor and the terrific songs and the dance. Yeah, there's some
very poignant moments that I think would surprise a lot of people. Yeah, yeah.
And what's can you give us a range of how the audiences react to it? Because as you say, that it's changes every night.
It does. Sometimes I'm not sure if they know what to expect going in, other than the fact that they know it's a spelling bee and that's all they know. You know, once they're seated. I don't think they know going in how funny it's going to be.
It really does surprise people on how funny
it is. That's it. Right from the beginning, once it gets rolling and you meet all the characters during the B, you know, and especially towards the second half of the show, just once, you know, you've connected with all the characters, you know, how it changes by the end. Again, it's very poignant and, you know, goes in a direction you might not see it going in.
All right, Derek, I got to ask you this.
Okay.
Has anyone ever spelled a word wrong that they were supposed to get right?
We have not had that happen yet. actually, the day before we opened, in our last dress rehearsal, I spelled a word wrong.
When you were supposed to get it right?
I was supposed to get it right. And there, I mean, there was...
I mean, you had a song to do and a scene to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was the rest of a show to finish. Yeah. And so, gracefully, this gentleman right here saved my life and fixed it somehow.
Well, tell us that, Bill. What you did?
This was, sorry, which
I mean, our listeners would love to hear that.
I spelled a coochie wrong.
Oh.
And I guess he basically just said that, you know, he gave it to me as if he had misheard, and I spelled it right and then kept it going.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. And, of course, nobody knew.
I hope not. Yeah, there it was very many people here.
But I'll tell you, some of the words that I heard in the show I saw, I had no idea. You could have said anything.
I still have no idea.
Yeah.
I guess it's thank God you learned the word. You learned the script.
That's absolutely right.
All right, now tell us. Let's run a little plug for the show.
All right,
it is at Water Tower.
Yep, the Drury Lane Water Tower Place
at 175 East
Chestnut
in Chicago.
Yep.
And give us what days you're running.
For the month of July, for the rest of the month, it is we're having shows Tuesday through Sunday.
Okay.
And then starting in August, there will be shows Wednesday through Sunday. And two shows on Wednesday as well as on Saturday and Sunday.
So
over
you
the
do a 3 o'clock matinee on Wednesday?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Yep.
2 o'clock on Wednesday,
yep.
Saturday and Sunday.
Correct.
Okay. And tickets are still available.
Tickets are still available.
But you guys have been very successful with this show, haven't you?
Crowds have been very big and they've been very responsive and wonderful. So, yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And what's the future for you, Bill?
I want to get into knitting. I mean, I've never really made anything. No, I'm not really sure. I would love to, you know, see this production continue for as long as they'll have us. I mean, just the fact, it feels so good to know every night when we leave that we've made, you know, a lot of people forget their troubles, make them laugh. And I mean, how can you not feel good about that? So.
Well, Derek, what's the future holding for you?
The future holds for me the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, 8 shows a week. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing to
Well, you know what's refreshing?
To have people come up to you and say, we just had such a great time.
And, you know, and it's infectious. You guys are having a good time every night.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it comes across. Well, yeah. Keep up the good work, and Chicago needs resident shows like this. Well, thanks, guys. This has been great, and keep up the good work, and I'm looking forward to more laughs.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your
time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This is Tom Williams saying, go see a play this week, and I'll tell you, Spelling Bee is certainly worth it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to this emancipated episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from The Tragedy of Macbeth, King of Scotland, Act 1, Scene 7. If it were done when 'tis done, then 'twere well it were done quickly. And we can't thank you enough for listening to this podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ear. So until next time, this is the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.